James Harden had a 32-point triple-double as the Rockets smashed the Jazz in Game 2 last night, 118-98. This was a rout from the first quarter as Utah continues to struggle offensively. They shoot only 21% from three. P.J. Tucker chipped in with 16 points on the win.
When we do what we do, I don't think anybody can beat us. And that's a fact. I don't care. We come out every night. We talk. We communicate. And when our two guys get going and they're aggressive, we're tough.
Pretty strong words. Are we starting to believe that they are better than they were last year?
I still got to see them a play against Golden State before I can really make a decision on that, because I don't know that they're better defensively. I know that they played really well defensively in these first two games against the Jazz, but they just don't have the same horses in Utah.
You know what I would say? The difference between this year's team and last year's team, defensively, if you look at how they've been since the All-Star break, how good this Rockets team has been defensively, last year it was based on a whole bunch of switching and a relatively unique approach that teams soon copied this year.
They slowed down the game a lot.
Whereas this year they're still switching, but not as much, and it feels like a less gimmicky version of really good defense. And it's based more on solid defense and actually doing something that flummoxes teams and they haven't seen a whole bunch of. So I feel better about this team in some ways. They're still at a disadvantage physically in some respects. Like they're not as long as last year. Defensively, it's going to be a different defensive challenge versus the Warriors, obviously, than it is versus the Jazz. So I don't think they're as good as last year, but last year's team didn't have Chris Paul for the last two and a quarter games in the series.
Well, maybe
that's the difference, is this year's team with Chris Paul is better than last year's team was in game 6 and 7 versus the Warriors.
That I definitely can't argue with, because I've been hesitating on this part for a while, because I think so much of last year's team. I think last year's team was one of the two best Rockets teams of all time. I really think highly of it. But I'm always open to new information, because that's the intellectually honest thing to do. And this team has been tremendous for the last couple of months, offensively, defensively.
Right. And it's such a huge difference, though, if you think about Chris Paul's presence. It's not whether this team is better than last year's team. Is this team right now, as composed, better than last year's team was in game 6 and 7 versus the Warriors? And it most assuredly is, yes, because Chris Paul, even though he hasn't been an offensive influence yet, looks spry, looks athletic, looks very, very, very much like Chris Paul. This particular team with a healthy Chris Paul is way better than last year's game 6 and game 7 team.
Next headline, Texans schedule has been released. They open up on the road at New Orleans Monday Night Football in Week 1 before they come home to face the Jaguars at home in Week 2. When you guys look at this schedule, what game do you have circled on the calendar?
Sunday night, when they take on the New England Patriots on December 1st. What kind of team are they going to be at that point in the year? Because theoretically, the defense is going to be about as good as it's going to be, right? When you've had about 3 months to play, can that secondary get to a level at that point for that game where they look competent? Because their final four games, cupcake buffet, Broncos, two games against the Titans, and the Bucks.
I'm looking at the Colts, November 21st, at home, where last year, late in the season, you lose to the Colts at home and then get drubbed by them again. I don't know. I'm not going to freak out if they lose up in Indianapolis, but when you're playing the Colts the week before you play the Patriots at home, on a Thursday night game, you gotta win that game. And you've gotta do it. You've gotta do it in a way that makes you feel good about going up against Tom Brady.
You have to win that game.
That point. Now, if you beat the Colts at home and then that next week versus the Patriots, how are people are so pistol whipped by the Patriots at this point. If the Texans have a winning record going into that game, and they beat the Colts at home on Thursday night football,
yep,
and you're about to face the Patriots at home 10 days later, do you allow yourself to get excited about that game?
So you're saying the Texans in this hypothetical have a winning record.
They've got a winning record. They have a convincing win versus the Colts at home. Let's say Andrew Luck is having a good season at all. Do you allow yourself, do fans allow themselves to get excited about that Patriots game?
They'd be nervous, but if they had a winning record with this schedule and beat up on Indianapolis, people would be pretty optimistic.
Mike, you know how many times I've come in here and talked myself into the Texans beating the Patriots and said it into a microphone to thousands and thousands of people, only to have to come in the next day and eat crow? You know, like, you know what that's like? You know what that's like, Mike? You don't. You sit back there. You sit there and you're like, well, maybe they possibly have a chance versus the Patriots today. So the next day for you is easy. The next day for you is like, well, to be intellectually honest, carpe diem and Occam's razor. And there you go. They lost. Where I got to sit up here after like convincing people driving in to their jobs, some of which they hate, and tell them like, hey, the Texans have an actual chance tonight versus the Patriots.
Well, I said, they can pull it off. Hold on. I've said twice already this offseason. They have to beat the Patriots.
That's different than telling people they will, Mike.
How can I tell them they will win?
I'm just telling you how much harder my plight is than yours. All right? There's nothing you have to do differently. It's that I tell people, like, yeah, they got a real shot. They're going to beat the Patriots. Don't you realize how different it is this time? And then I basically turn into the guy that is a serial adulterer, and like every single time, like, no, baby, this time it's different. So like, come November, I'm going to be talking to everybody.
This time's different, baby.
This time's different. I've changed. This time they really have a chance versus the Patriots.
And you're acting like your plight is tough. My plight's even more difficult. I predicted it in week one. Imagine being the resident Patriot scholar of Houston, Texas, and being completely wrong, and then having a bunch of dumb massholes come at you and say, "Oh wow, have you ever watched the Patriots play football?"
I don't get it. Like, come at me, assholes. Like, they're angry about the loss of the textile industry more than anything else. Rob Gronkowski dented the Lombardi Trophy yesterday.
He did.
And everybody's like, ha ha, Gronk.
It is actually pretty hilarious.
It looks kind of nice, actually.
The game, tried to bunt a baseball with it.
The game I have circled at Kansas City, week number six.
Oh, yeah.
This is a road game, obviously. It's a noon start, and Watson needs to beat Pat Mahomes. That is the game I have circled on the calendar. Next headline, Astros 10-game winning streak came to an end in the top of the ninth last night.
Stanton needs to set up on the outside corner, let it really go outside. And he got a high fastball. He strikes out Chirinos, and that's the ball game. So the Astros threaten, but they do not score in the ninth, and the A's hang on and win the second game of the series to get their record up over 500.
That was on the A's television network. The Astros did have two runners on base as Chirinos struck out. A's get the split of this short two-game series with a 2-1 win. I'm actually feeling pretty good about this because I thought Wade Miley pitched well last night. And I actually was happy with the ninth inning. I thought that Brantley had an excellent at-bat to draw. Watkins, Trinan, and Yuli, you know, fought off a couple of tough pitches. They keep putting pressure on these teams. You're not going to win every single game. So as far as losses go, I was fine with last night.
I actually like it when you go dry across the board because I feel like everybody gets it out of their system and then you get back on board the next day. So I'm obviously fine with losing one to the A's.
It's like a bender when you turn 30 years old, you know? You get it out of your system, then you go keto and don't drink for a month.
Yeah. Baby, I'm going to be different this time.
Yeah.
Paul's going to be different.
I'm so nervous for this weekend.
I'll never touch it again. I'll probably never drink again.
I'm so nervous about this weekend, the first tempting.
You got to go on a retreat. You got to go out hiking in the wilderness or something.
Yeah, I know. You've told me this before. I actually might take you up on this
now. Why are you so scared of hiking? Hiking's the best.
Because I'll get bored and I'll look at my
phone. No. You're going to leave your phone in your car. Yeah.
What if I get lost?
It's hard to do.
Yeah, you go to an easy trail. You're not going to be out hiking the Klondike or something. Just go find yourself a trail that's going to take you 4 or 5 hours.
Go glamping.
What the hell is glamping?
Glamping's like where you tell yourself you're camping, but you're staying in like a really nice cabin or something.
Really nice cabin, yes.
We're going back. How many mani-pedis did you get while you were camping?
Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Thursday. Time now for Move Seth's Needle.
What just happened, Mike? What'd
you do? I had my microphone off, and I hit my tumbler onto the top of the microphone.
Oh, all right. I thought you were about to vomit or something.
No, I'm fine.
Because you're sick of that opening like I am. I'm going to address something one of our listeners said, because we were talking about how daunting that opening game versus the Saints is in New Orleans. Multiple listeners have pointed out that the Saints have lost their last five home openers, their last five opening games, most notably last year versus the Bucks. Remember last year after week one, like, hey, the
Bucks are back.
The Bucks might be back and the Saints are done.
Yep.
How'd that work out? But one of our listeners says, oh God, I'm peeing my pants thinking about the Saints game. Come on. That anger stuff is overrated. Cause I was saying, look, the Saints are very motivated, just like they were after Bountygate, just like the Patriots were after Deflategate. The Saints are angry about the way they had a Super Bowl trip robbed from them by the officials at the end of the year. I think at first glance, yeah, it sounds overly simplistic to say, wow, that anger is just going to drive them and motivate them to crush all these teams. the way I've always looked at it is this, and with bulletin board material, I'm the same way. Because some players will swear that bulletin board material doesn't work. That, like, if some guy from another team says that your team sucks, that somehow that doesn't affect your preparation. Oh, come on. Get over it. This is where the bulletin board material and the anger actually works. It's not on game day. Everybody's motivated on game day. It's that extra little edge it gives you in preparation. It's that extra little bit of film you watch. It's that extra rep you do because you're thinking about the enemy or you're thinking about Goodell. It's that everly little, for the head coach like Sean Payton, who's been at it for years, it's that extra little bit of, you know what, this year's a little bit different. I'm not just going to get stuck in a rut and go through the motions. Not that he ever does that, but there's like a little something extra every single day. And that adds up. And then it culminates in a Monday night opening, much in the same way that the Saints came out after Katrina. Do you remember that? That was a whole different deal. But there was an outpouring of, like, okay, emotions and noise and everything. Well, like, in a weird way, this is going to be a little bit like the Monday night in Katrina, where there's just extra oomph behind everything.
Here's why I disagree. There are some games I hate playing. Like, I hate playing the Colts when Pagano was coming back from cancer, because I feel like it's impossible to win. Although, when the Texans were playing after Harvey, they lost, because life sucks sometimes. But here's what I'm hearing from you guys about the Saints. Here's what I'm hearing. The Saints are angry. They're angry, and I'm supposed to sit here and think the Texans will lose because they're angry. Listen, I can live with them losing because of Drew Brees and Michael Thomas and Kamara, but I can't honestly sit here and say, well, they're angry,
well,
and thus the Texans are going to lose.
No, because, okay, did you not hear everything I just said?
I heard it.
Like, they're going to be better prepared going into this offseason, going into this home opener than they have been before. And it's Drew Brees. It's more than anything, it's Drew damn Brees versus that pass defense.
But why shouldn't the Texans be angry? The Colts just came in here and just basically kicked our asses.
Because Bill O'Brien's anger is like my anger. After a while, people just tune it out. And they're like, it's just whatever. Yeah, all right. Oh, O'Brien's angry. Better work harder.
I like it. I think what we're saying, Mike, is that it's not just that the Saints are going to beat the Texans because they're a better football team. It's also that they're going to beat them by a lot because they're a mad better football team. So it's going to be a difficult Monday night as we watch, once again, as the Texans get exposed on national television.
Move Seth's needle on a Thursday.
That's another thing. And don't just bear with me here for a second, guys. I'll explain this if you're not a Game of Thrones watcher. Just know this. There's a life lesson here. Theon Greyjoy in Game of Thrones. Spoiler alert. Earlier on in this series, he murdered a couple of young boys. Let's say 8 and 10 years old.
Around there.
By now, as we get to the series finale, everybody is largely forgiven Theon because it turns out they were not the Stark boys. They were just a couple of farm boys.
Yep. Yeah.
And as I rewatch this series, at every turn, Theon tries to remind people, hey, I did still actually kill a couple of children. And they're like, yeah, but it wasn't the Starks. And I'm just left wondering, like, how do we as viewers get over this? Like, how do we allow all the nobility? Cause it's nobility. This is the important thing. Everybody thought Theon killed a couple of young noblemen, but in fact, they were just a couple of young farm boys, and everybody's cool with it after they find out, like, oh, it wasn't the Starks, it was just a couple of farm kids.
Human beings are complicated.
Okay.
Jaime Lannister has a similar arc as well, and Theon has done some terrible things, but then he's on the road to redemption.
Increases the surplus population.
This is where it comes full circle, though, Mike, because this is where I get angry watching Game of Thrones while I'm thinking about you. You watch Game of Thrones. You've forgiven Theon, who murdered a couple children.
Yes.
You've forgiven Jaime Lannister, who did push a 10-year-old out a window and tried to murder him.
Yeah, but I mean, he kind of sucks.
But yet, in your mind,
yep,
a PED suspension is the greatest crime ever committed to humanity in the game of football.
Well, listen, if Brian Cushing can go on the road to redemption like Jaime Lannister, which hopefully Brian is on, then I am absolutely open to forgiving him.
This is the other thing that I'm going to forgive a little bit.
He can get on it. Has he got on it already?
Yeah. Maybe he is.
Last item for Move Seth's Needle. I'm going to forgive the horn at the A's Coliseum. I think that it was, the first game 2 nights ago, I think the mics were set up differently than they had been before. Last night, the horn didn't bother me as much. And when you look back to the history of the horn, a lot of it goes back to the ownership of Charlie Finley back in the day, where he basically wanted to make the A's different and also kind of embrace the counterculture up there in Northern California. So he gave them those loud colors with the white shoes. He allowed players to have facial hair back in 1968.
Good.
He kind of embraced the hippie culture. And the horns and the noisemakers are kind of part of all that. Just trying to... No, those are the
vuvuzelas.
The ukuleles. Yeah.
Vuvuzela.
Vuvuzela.
I think there was one last night. And as you guys pointed out, it's getting more annoying.
By the way, one of the worst things I did yesterday was invite people to tell me what vuvuzela was an ethnic slur for. And I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah.
That was a rough stretch of me pretending like I wasn't laughing. So there you go. So I pardoned the horns. I'm okay with the horns with the A's.